Welcome back, all you minnows, tadpoles, and dragonflies, to episode 28 of the Rescue Swimmer Mindset Podcast. This is Vince again. Now, a topic I started talking about last chapter, and I was mostly focusing on those older individuals that are either, you know, pursuing elite type athletic training or pursuing one of these schools like BUDS or, say, Rescue Swimmer School. So for those individuals, if you recall, I addressed the fact that you really have to be careful, attentive, but more importantly, simply smarter about the way you train. And though I addressed that was mostly important for those older individuals, in the past couple weeks, we've actually gotten a lot of questions from some younger folks, such as in between the age of like 16 and 19, with growing injuries. And they're asking us questions about, say, their knees or their ankles. And though we try to answer them as best we can, the truth is, we're not doctors. We're not physical therapists. I mean, Cody used to be an EMT, and though I'm still a current wilderness EMT, all that means is I'm licensed to provide emergency life support to the public in either the urban or the backcountry settings. But that doesn't make me an expert in the sector of injury prevention. Now, what we have been doing in the past and what we will continue to do is to give you advice as far as our own experience and our general medical knowledge. That being said, it shouldn't be a substitute for actually being seen by a professional such as a doctor or a physical therapist, especially if those injuries keep persisting. That said, since it's clearly such a recurring issue with, you know, you individuals that are training hard, hopefully during this quarantine, and that's, in a sense, it's great that I'm hearing that people are getting injured, because that means, you know, they're getting after it even though they're sheltered within their home, hopefully, or, you know, keeping social distancing. So, you know, I'm seeing the good in this, but it's also a flaw that everyone seems to be overtraining. So that's going to be the topic of today's episode, which is overtraining. What is it? How to avoid it? How to avoid injuries? And once you have an injury, how to mitigate it? So first, let's go over the difference between an injury and soreness. So soreness will usually feel achy, stiff, tight, but an injury will usually be more of a sharp pain. Now, that doesn't mean you might not be feeling pain with soreness, but this is something I want us to separate, is the difference between soreness and an actual injury. So again, soreness is more tender. You may feel tired, maybe even a burning feeling in that area, and it tends to affect an entire area and or a muscle group rather than more of a specific spot. So sorenesses or pains will typically go away with proper stretching, rest, potentially icing or warming, or both depending on the area. On the other end, an injury will typically last a longer period of time, often between weeks to months. And though stretching can sometimes be a remedy, as well as icing and warming and cooling and elevation, you know, a lot of times it's something that needs to be assessed, as in somebody needs to look over your movement, when the pain is caused, how it's caused, you know, the direction in which it's caused. And this is really where you, if that pain has persisted for a long period of time, say a couple weeks or a month, and say you've been resting it, yet the pain persists, then that's really the point where you should be going to see at least a physical therapist or a professional. So let's talk about overtraining though. As most individuals know, muscles need about 2 to 3 days rest to truly rebuild themselves. Which means if you're working out on Monday, a specific muscle group on Monday, that specific muscle should not be worked hard until Thursday. And that's because when you're working out, you're stretching that muscle. And then after your workout, that muscle is actually breaking itself down before rebuilding. And a lot of body, like if you're bodybuilding, you actually notice this. You know, maybe you'll be very swole after a workout. You're like, damn, I look ripped, like immediately after a workout, maybe within like no more than an hour after the workout. But over the next hours and day or 2 days, it actually looks like you're skinnier than you were before that workout. That's because that muscle truly is breaking itself down. So that's why it's so important to give yourself that either 2 to 3 days of rest in between very hard muscle-specific intensive workouts. Now, if you're going to be attending one of these elite military schools, at first, at least during those weed-out weeks at the start, all right, they're not going to give you that rest, and that's because they want to see if you have that resilience. However, that resilience in the sense of really working and overusing those muscle groups is not something I would say is crucial to train, at least not to train frequently. So when you're building yourself up for these very elite athletic feats, then there's no need to really break yourself down. That's when you're risking the actual injuries. So when you feel that tweaking, that sharp pain, the general rule of thumb is if you feel pain doing a specific exercise, stop doing that exercise. Give it a week or two rest and then come back to it. And if you're still getting pain, try to reassess how you're doing that exercise. So your shoulders hurt while you're doing push-ups. Okay, well, are you keeping your humerus in line with your labrum? As in, are you keeping your shoulder blade within that socket? Or are your shoulders either raised, pointing forward? Is one unbalanced to the other? Again, is that shoulder blade within that socket? Are your elbows in a good 45 degree angle with your body? Are you pushing with your lats or are you pushing with your shoulders? Because you should be always pushing with the larger muscle groups, which in the case of a push-up is your lats and your chest. And sometimes you just have to sign yourself up for an ego check and really assess, do I really know how to do this exercise right? I mean, squatting specifically is a science. I'd actually recommend that you follow squat_university on Instagram, and he just goes into thorough detail. I think he actually is a physical therapist, and he goes into thorough detail about the physiology, the science, the motion, the injury prevention behind squatting specifically. So I'd highly recommend you look into that, because squatting is surprisingly an all-body workout, and it's imperative to success in almost any athletic sport, in my opinion. It's also a great injury prevention exercise if done properly. So again, squatting is a very complicated movement, even though it seems so simple. So again, try to check yourself. Am I doing this exercise right? Potentially not. So let me tell you a story about simple running. So I've never been a track runner or never really had that much of a running background in my past. And when I was attending my airman program, and if you recall last week, I addressed how my airman program just felt a lot more grueling than rescue swimmer school at the time, because those rescue swimmers in Barbers Point, Hawaii were sick and tired of not having a graduate at rescue swimmer school. So they just beat us to the ground. And one of the things they would have us do a lot is runs, and specifically sprints. And the sprints would be in between these telephone poles. So it's one of those exercises. I actually love this exercise still to this date. So you find, you know, telephone poles if you have that, or street lights, whatever kind of neighborhood you're at, or a fence posts. But in this situation, it was these telephone lines, and you jog at a slow pace, you know, a slow, moderate conversational jog in between the first post and the second post. Then when you hit that second post, you increase the speed until you are at a full out sprint when you've hit that third pole. Once you've hit that third pole, now you are maintaining your full out sprint until you hit that fifth pole. And then you return to a slow jog, and that's your recovery, and so on and so forth. And you repeat this process, and we would do this for, you know, I think up to 5-10 minutes, which is a lot when you're sprinting like that. Anyway, all that being said, I developed an IT band injury. So that's on the outside of your kneecap, and it runs all along the length of your humerus. So this was, you know, if at first it was a pain, which I thought was attributed to soreness, but then it started to feel sharp and tweaky. So being young and honestly being afraid of not being sent to rescue swimmer school because of this injury, which could happen, they don't want to send candidates that are injured, I kept it to myself. I started doing my own research, and I actually saw a private physician to get it assessed, and he started giving me exercises as well as stretches to try to mitigate the pain, and it did help. However, it wasn't until I confessed the pain, because they clearly saw me limping one day. One of the rescue swimmers, who I had tremendous respect for because he was very well educated in physical therapy, injury prevention, and just general sports science. So the first thing this rescue swimmer did was ask me to run while he watched. So he just assessed my running style. And at the time, I had these big ASIC, the company ASICs, big rubber-soled shoes. And from my experience at the time and knowledge, you know, the bigger the sole, the more the cushioning. So that would help my injury. I assumed it would help absorb the weight. But when that instructor watched me run, he noticed I was completely relying upon the technology of the shoe to absorb my body weight, which means I was totally landing on the heel of my shoe, which goes against human physiology. The whole reason we have a calf is as our body shock to absorb our weight as we're running or walking. The fact is, when we were just primal Homo sapiens, we didn't have shoes. So you would land walking or running either on the center part of your foot, which is ideal, or the front part of your foot. So after this instructor assessed my running style, he said, all right, here's what we're going to do. Forget everything you know about running. I'm going to teach you how to run now. And this is already 3, maybe even 4 months of my Ironman program. My Ironman program ended up being 5 months because they didn't have an opening in the school for an extra month. So we slowly rebuilt my running style. So at the time, I always ran with long strides and heel strikes. So what we converted this into was shorter strides, more frequent strides, and landing on the center part of my foot. And to do this, we ended up purchasing a minimalist shoe for me, which was completely different to anything I had ever run with. And it was pretty funny to watch me at first, because this instructor really was hard pressed on the fact that I needed to concentrate on taking very small steps. So small and quick. So it was almost like every time I would run, no matter the distance, the sprint or the length, if it was a long run, short, it looked like I ran in step ladders, as in those training ladders where you're doing quick feet. That's how I ran regardless of the distance. And it was astonishing at how quickly that pain completely subsided. And that was because I just didn't know how to run. And, you know, running is running. It's putting one foot in front of the other. But there's a lot that goes behind it that I was not aware of. So that's my first recommendation. If there's a pain that you're feeling during a specific exercise, check yourself. Do some research. Are you doing that exercise properly? Or are you a donkey? You're probably a donkey. Okay, so again, you feel pain, you stop, give it a week or two rest, try again, and if you still have pain, reassess if you're doing it properly. Now, the other thing, if you're very serious about either competing athletically or, again, attending one of these elite military schools, don't perform idiotic activities. Now, what I mean by this is, I'll give you an example. I've been training very hard recently to become a strong rock climber. And when I went home on Thanksgiving, which is actually in mid-October for us Canadians, eh? Don't you know? Any hoodles, it's a tradition for us to play football. And truthfully, you know, that we're kind of rough. You know, we like to tackle each other and we're all competitive. And, you know, I see some of these individuals in my family, large individuals. And that's when you really got to put yourself in a check, as in, all right, what's my long-term goal? What's truly important to me? Is it to tackle Billy in the football game at the family reunion? No. Billy might hurt my ankle. And then I'm out of commission to do what I want to accomplish in the long run. And this is actually a topic I've talked about with Cody, because that's how he got an injury in his airman program, was playing recreational basketball. So just be aware, and I'm sorry I called it, you know, idiotic sports, but be aware that every time you're engaging in one of these recreational activities or any kind of physical challenging activity that's not within the discipline that you're actually training for, well, you're putting yourself at risk. So, you know, don't be an idiot. And ultimately what that comes down to is maturity. The maturity to not put the present you at risk at the expense of jeopardizing the future you. Wow, that was deep. Look at me go. Ooh. All right, just to recap, recreational sports, just watch it, because the likelihood is if you're listening to this podcast, then you're probably competitive. So when you're participating in these recreational sports, you're putting yourself at risk. Now, let's talk about getting injuries because of overuse. And even if you're being smart about your training, giving yourself a rest, the fact is you could still overwear either tendons, muscles, joints. So when that happens, it's best to switch up your exercises or your routine, your training. I'll give you an example. I develop an ankle pain when finning with those jet fins. And if any of you guys have gotten the Scuba Pro jet fins or the, I think it's Aqualung rocket fins, at first when you put those things on your feet, it feels like you have 2x4s. It does not feel like any other fin. It doesn't feel smooth. It feels terrible. And your ankles get just tired because they don't have the strength to support that kind of pressure. It's a very specific pressure on your ankles. So I recall after, you know, my first few months of starting to train hard with these jet fins, you know, I really couldn't do it effectively without feeling tremendous pain on honestly both ankles at that point. So what I did was just start swimming without the fins for a little bit. So I did that for about a week, and then I moved up and trained for about a month with normal fins, as in regular scuba diving fins that are a little more supple. I can't believe I just used that word. And body surfing fins as well. Basically just fins that were easier on my ankles. And that remedy seemed to work. So I took approximately a week off. Then I upgraded to simply swimming with just my feet. So again, now I'm starting to rebuild that muscle. Then I upgraded to easier and smoother fins. And eventually I got back to those, you know, 2x4 jet fins. And I was okay at that point. And the muscle had rebuilt, the joints had adapted, and that allowed my ankles to be strong enough to succeed in the airman program and in rescue swimmer school and in my career as a rescue swimmer. And actually, now that I think of it, that injury reminds me of a very rescue swimmer niche injury, especially in rescue swimmer school. And that is, you would get these, I guess I can only describe it as a tumor, basically this big old bump on the top of your foot, you know, the highest part of your foot, basically where that bone is at its highest point. And an injury that we would frequently have is where that bump would grow. It would create a lot of pain, and then sometimes it would even cave in, and then it would bleed, and then it would scab over, and it was just a terrible thing. And that was a combination, again, of those really hard jet fins that were consistently, you know, either buddy towing with or pushing bricks with. Basically, they're always on your feet, and that friction and pressure on a consistent basis would create these bumps. I would call them like foot volcanoes. And it was gross because every candidate basically had those. So some individuals had the solution of they would only put duct tape around their foot because that would take away the friction on the skin directly. So they would put duct tape and then they would put their booty on top and then they would put the fin on top. One that I personally use, I put the duct tape on my foot and on the outside of the booty. So again, it would alleviate the friction within the booty and on the outside of the booty. Some individuals bought these, I think they were like wart bandages. So it's a circle kind of compress and you stick it on. So that would create an elevated ring around the wound. That never worked for me. Actually, if anything, that would eventually peel off into a ball, which would only increase pressure on the wound. It would almost become like a rock ball. So that was not a solution for me. What ended up being my personal cheat code, if you will, is I realized one day that the reason for which I was getting the pain is because the box, the opening in which you put your foot within the fin, is basically just a rectangle. And your foot is not a rectangular shape. The top of your foot is circular. And they would often give you these new fins and they were just not broken in. It wouldn't warp to your foot at all. In fact, you would see airspace on the sides because, again, your foot's not a rectangle. So I had the idea of asking the gear rescue swimmer. So there's, you know, all these rescue swimmer instructors have different duties on the side. And one of the instructors was assigned as the gear officer, if you will. So I asked him, could I get a different fin? And he's like, why? Your fin's perfectly new. So what's the issue? And I said, I would just like a different one. This one's creating some foot pain for me. And he's like, all right. Luckily, the instructor liked me. So we went to the gear room and he's like, all right, pick whatever one you want. I don't care. And I was like, where's the old fins? He goes, why? And I go, well, I have an idea. And he goes, they're in a box down there. So I get the box of old fins and I pick basically the oldest looking one that wasn't falling apart. So I picked one that looked well used, but the rubber wasn't cracking yet. And I remember putting those things on and it felt like a Cinderella shoe. It felt like it was made for my foot. The rubber just molded and warped around my foot and just hugged it like a Care Bear. And it was just a game changer. And sure, like the actual finning strength kind of changed because a softer fin doesn't give you that same kind of finning power. But I just readapted my finning stroke to the new fin. And my injury went away that day forward. So I guess the moral of that story is check your gear, check your equipment. Like I said, I had a big, fat, rubber-soled shoe, an ASIC shoe, and I switched to a minimalist shoe, and I changed my running style, and that's what solved my running injury. Same goes for the fins. The fins were too stiff. I found a solution, and I changed my finning technique. All right, now let's get back to overtraining. Now, personally, I recommend that you train in between 4 to 5 times a week if you're training for, again, an elite athletic feat. And if you are training that often, then it is imperative to be attentive to what muscle groups you're really overwearing and give it that 2 to 3 days rest. And this even goes for apnea training, as in breath holding training. That's actually found within chapter 11 of the Hold Your Breath Like a Helicopter Rescue Swimmer training program. I talk about the fact that I used to think that you could never overtrain breath holding. And that's actually untrue. So without giving you all the details found within the class, I just want to be fair to the people that have purchased the program. But a part of the reason why you don't want to overtrain breath holding is because you're actually depriving your body of hemoglobins that are found within your red blood cells. So breath holding, just like everything else, should only be trained, I would say, no more than 3 times a week. Oh yeah, and actually a lot of you guys have been asking me about apnea tables, which is a great question, especially during quarantine. It's a great way to train your breath holding. So definitely check out chapter 11. I believe it's over 20 minutes at least, one of the longer chapters. And I go through every apnea table that helped me graduate rescue swimmer school. So definitely check that out if you haven't already. Back to overtraining. And now I actually want to talk about overtraining when you're attending either rescue swimmer school or BUDS. Now, there's such a thing as a sandbagger, and that's probably a term you're going to hear in these schools. That's definitely something you should avoid at all costs. You do not want to be labeled as a sandbagger. You want to give your best effort as much as you can. That being said, this is something me and Cody talk about quite frequently. Whatever you're best at in these elite military schools, use that and tone back your energy output to about 60 to 70%. Put yourself hopefully in the middle or maybe even the front of the pack, but only operate, I'd say, no more than 80% at that activity that you're best at. And that activity will become your rest period. Don't overexert yourself or overtrain if you don't have to. The other thing I briefly want to talk about is pacing yourself. Now, this is a flaw I would always see in school is, all right, this is going to sound braggadocious, but I was the fastest gear swimmer in my class. Yet every time, no matter what exercise, the other candidates would storm out of the gate like Seabiscuit on cocaine, as in way faster than my pace. And I would just look at these donkeys. And every time, within, I don't know, a lap, maybe at most two, you know, I was easily catching up and then just cruising past them. And it was really that story of the hare and the turtle and the hare. I'm too French to know what that story is, but you know what I'm talking about. Pace yourself, especially know who's best at what activity, as in I was not the best runner in rescue swimmer school, but I knew who was. I knew who was better than me, and I would pace myself to them. And my own personal challenge would be to try to either catch up with them or narrow the gap in between us. And this is actually something I did. All right, here's a story. Before attending rescue swimmer school, I joined, and I would highly recommend this, what's called a master's class. And master's classes is for anybody in between the age of, I believe, 18 and whatever. So it's these, you pay for this class, you go to a pool, and mine was like at 5 a.m. It was pretty brutal. You show up, and they give you training workouts and you do them. And there's a coach there. And if you have terrible technique, which I did, he'll coach you. And, you know, you progress and you work your way up. Anyway, when I showed up, the coach asked me, which pool lane do you want to get into? And I remember looking from right to left, and the rightmost lane had these 70-year-old women that were, you know, to be truthful, larger build, and they just didn't look very well in shape. On the left lane, you had these thinner, strong-looking athletes with six-packs and strong-looking delts. Looking at them, you know, they were in their 40s. I was like, hey, I'll put myself in the middle lane. So in between those two, there was, you know, some average-looking folk, which I figured, hey, you know what, I could probably hang with them. So I get in that lane, and first exercise, I put myself, you know, the second starter, everyone's passing me. I'm embarrassed. So I'm like, oh, maybe it's just that exercise I'm not good at. Next exercise, same thing. I'm in the back of that, you know, lane. So I'm like, that's it. I'm downgrading myself to the rightward lane with the 70-year-olds. So I get in that lane. I'm like, all right, I'll show these 70-year-olds how it's done. And same thing, 70-year-olds are cruising past me, and I'm like, dang, all right, ego check, here we go. So, you know, took me some months, but eventually I graduated from the 70-year-old lane back into the middle lane, and I was in the back of the pack in the middle lane, and eventually I was able to work my way to being the best of that middle lane, and eventually I finally got to that leftward lane. And, you know, I gave them a run for their money. And that's how I learned to swim with proper technique. But that just goes to show, learn to pace yourself. I first would find, all right, who is the worst 70-year-old woman swimmer? All right, let's see if I can keep up with her. And once I was finally able to, I was like, yes, all right, let's go to the next person. But I wasn't trying to keep up with the next person. I was just trying to narrow that gap. So again, find the person that's best at a certain activity and pace yourself off of them. If you're in front of them out of the gate, then you're doing something wrong because in the end, they're always at the finish line before you are. So what are you doing? Relax, put yourself behind them and work your way at narrowing the gap. And hopefully you graduate to the next person that's great at that activity. And the next person, so on and so forth, until hopefully you're the top of the pack. And that ties into overtraining. Because if you're pushing yourself too hard, too fast, then that's when those injuries may happen. So that's it. Let's train smarter, not harder. All right, that's all for this week. Hoorah!